I'm Kurt Benkert, and this is Pocket Presence, powered by Sleeper. Let's get it. Welcome back to another case study for Pocket Presence. This time, we're going to be talking about the Cleveland Browns. And the Browns are kind of this like sneaky, no one's talking about them. They don't have a lot of money to make a lot of moves this offseason, so they've been relatively quiet, but they had a really good year last year. All things considered, Deshaun Watson didn't play well, and then he started playing well, and then he got hurt. Joe Flacco, comeback player of the year, started having a crazy ending, had a crazy run. It ended with a lot of interceptions in the playoffs, which we kind of felt was coming. Storybook ending, not so much for them. But the AFC North, Tyler, it's kind of like an older version of the NFC North, in my opinion, when I look at this. I think anybody could win this division except for one team. Steelers, I'm sorry, this is not going to be good for you. I look at the Steelers and the Vikings as very similar this year, but the Browns, man, plus 500-ish, plus 600-ish to win the division behind the Ravens and the Bengals. But when you look at them, their team's kind of stacked.
Yeah, it's a hard team to talk about because I think the Joe Flacco story overshadowed what the Browns were last year. And I'm excited to dive into them because there's a lot of components here. Joe Flacco being now removed from the team. Like you said, they're a stacked team and they're at plus 500. I don't think it's crazy to take a shot at them winning this division, but a lot of it hinges, I think, on Deshaun Watson playing well because there are a lot of known quantities. I think we'll talk about Kevin Stefanski, good coach. Jim Schwartz, great defensive coordinator. They have studs on each side of the ball. There's just this unknown quantity in Deshaun Watson that I think can propel them as high as top of a really tough division and maybe a top three seed in the AFC, or fall as low as you could see them finishing last this year if Deshaun doesn't play well. So they're a super hot and cool team.
Yeah, I look at them, man, and I'm like, dang, I see their schedule. They got a lot of winnable games. I look at their roster, and I know that Chubb is coming off of a nasty injury, but at the end of the day, people make recoveries from that. We'll see. He's been in, what, 7 years in the league. He's kind of getting toward the tail end of what running backs typically do. But Jerome Ford came in and was toting the rock. Their run game did not really miss a beat. And when you look at what they have on offense, if Deshaun Watson can come, show up, and just play point guard, kind of like we talked about in the Caleb Williams episode, Deshaun Watson does not have to be a superhero for them to win the division or at the very least make it in a wild card spot. And again, in the NFL now, there's three wild card spots. So you don't have to win the division to get to the playoffs. I think for them, they're playing for wild card or better, and they have the defense to do it. Their defense is so stacked. Their offense is stacked. Like, you look across the board at who they have in the different position rooms and receiver. You look at him, you got Amari Cooper. They just traded for Jerry Jeudy, who I think is going to be a good player this year. Like, he's shown flashes that he can be good. I think he was in a dog shit situation, and I think Jerry Jeudy is going to not have to be wide receiver one. And I know Cortland Sutton took over as wide receiver one in Denver, but they were trying to make Jerry Jeudy wide receiver one, and he's a slot guy. He could be this sneaky, shifty third down guy. And don't forget, they have Elijah Moore, who's also a stud. And then you look at their tight end, David Njoku, who I think is one of the most underrated tight ends in the league. He has the most unique skill set, maybe out of any tight end in the league. I know Kittle is so good in the run game, and he's sneaky good in the pass game, and he's explosive, and he kind of plays like a wrestler. He plays kind of like Gronk a little bit, but he's better in the run game. Where I'm looking at Njoku, like, Njoku is a top shelf, go up and get it, also able to manhandle people. He's a monster. He's massive, dude. I just look at this offense, and I'm like, if Deshaun Watson can just be a fraction of what he was in Houston on that terrible team, they can be a really, really good team this year. And those odds are really nice at plus 500. I also think their playoff odds, let's see, the Browns' odds to make the playoffs right now are plus 150. Like, the Browns made the playoffs last year with a worse team. And if Deshaun Watson plays better than Joe Flacco or even close to what Joe Flacco did, they will make the playoffs. And let's not forget, the Bengals had a tough time with the Browns defense. The Ravens had a tough time with the Browns defense. The Browns defense is for real. That first stretch of the season that they had last year where they let up the least amount of points in the history of the NFL, if they do a fraction of that, they'll be a playoff team. This is a defense like ran league, as far as I'm concerned, of getting through the playoffs and making a deep run. You do have to have an offense, obviously, that can score points, but some of these teams that made these miraculous runs, like the Chiefs, they were not an offense-led team this year. They were a defense-led team, and offense closed it out in crunch time. So let's not forget that. But I don't know, man. I'm looking at the Browns, and I'm like, I like the odds. I like what they have. I think Deshaun Watson cannot play any worse than he did at the beginning of last season. And they ended up in the playoffs, and they were fine. So that's what I'm looking at right now.
I mean, let's talk about that. Browns fans will go through this whole offseason listening to awful Deshaun Watson stats. So I'll spare them the suffering. I think it's worth saying that you say he can't play any worse. He's had an 84.3 QBR. He, of course, is taking up a ton of salary cap room. It's why they've been so quiet this offseason. 22% of the cap, 13.5% of this year's cash spending is going to Deshaun Watson. And he just hasn't played a full season since coming to Cleveland. He had the suspension. Mm-hmm. Then last year he got injured. And Kurt, you're one of the only people that I hear say like he had some positive momentum heading into the offseason. Like I've heard you say a couple times now that he was playing well in that last game, and then it took Joe Flacco to bring them to the playoffs. But what were you seeing from Deshaun in that last game before he got injured, and what are you hoping for from him this year?
Yeah, so I mean, let's talk about it. He started using his feet when he needed to, and even the beginning part of that game, he didn't play well. It started out looking like a Deshaun Watson game. Early in that game, they got down like two scores or something like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but he led them back to win against the Ravens 33-31. He had a touchdown. He had an interception. His completion percentage wasn't great, but he had 8 carries for 40 yards damn near. And the game before that, he had 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, threw for over 200 yards, like okay completion percentage, ran for 20-something yards. Like the games that he starts using his feet. And again, all these games that I'm seeing on this stat sheet that he played in, he played against the Bengals on 9-10, and they won 24-3. He ran the ball for 45 yards. They played the Steelers, and they just barely lost. And again, the Steelers' defense was really good last year. The Steelers' offense wasn't great, but defense was. He ran for 22 yards. Against the Titans, they beat them 27-3, threw for 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, 82% completion percentage. Like, beat the Colts he didn't play in that Colts game. And then they beat the Cardinals 27-0. Like, I'm looking at these regular season stats, and yeah, he didn't play great, but when he was in these games, they went 1-2-3-4-5-1. I mean, to like not play great and your team win games, you're going to be all right. And he is going to play better this year than he did last year. He's going to be more prepared. He's going to have more time in that offense. Like, he's now got also more time behind him from all the scandal stuff that he went through. He is going to be fine. And even if he becomes a fraction of who he was when he got paid, they will be all right. It's not like he's got the yips and like just can't throw the ball anymore. Like, he, I don't know, man. I'm excited. I'm excited to see what this narrative for him turns out to be, because I don't think he's a bad player all of a sudden just because we saw flashes of misery from him. So I'm excited to see. Like, he's got to be hearing it. He's been seeing it. Like, he doesn't want to go out and suck ass. I promise that. So what work has he put in this offseason and his recovery and all this other stuff? And what has he done to take the next step in the offense? Like, I don't know, man. And obviously when you see somebody like Joe Flacco come in and have success and not have to be a superhero, maybe that allows you to just chill out and take completions a little bit and lean on your run game and lean on your defense and know that you could probably start the season 8-4, 9-3 and not have to do a whole lot. And then it comes down to crunch time. December, January, what are you going to do to change your playoff implications?
Where would you rank Deshaun in this division of quarterbacks that is really strong? And I know you don't speak highly of the Steelers quarterback room, which now has Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. But I mean, you're talking about a division with Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, Deshaun Watson, like maybe one of the best divisions for quarterbacks. So where does he stack up for you amongst those 4 or 5 guys?
Yeah, dude. I mean, it depends on what version of Deshaun Watson we get. If we get vintage Deshaun Watson again, how old is he now? Let's see.
He is 28 years old. He'll be 29 in September.
Dude, like, Deshaun Watson's just coming into his prime as a quarterback. Like, he did a lot of the stuff that he did when he was younger off of just like feel for the game. And I like the feel for the game is not lost. And I will say, he played in a dome early on in his career, and playing outdoors and playing in Cleveland is freaking tough. It's very similar to playing in Chicago. Like, it's windy, it's right on the water. Like, it's not easy. So that does change things. And I also think like the style of defenses they play against is different than what they saw regularly down in Houston. So it's, the game's different for him now, but look, man, I'm excited. I think that he could be the second best quarterback in this division by the end of the year. I'm really excited to see what does Joe Burrow do this year? Like, Joe Burrow, in my opinion, has a lot of pressure on him coming into this season. Last year didn't go as planned. They came off the Super Bowl loss like not long ago. He had a backup come in last year that was lighting it up and just slinging it around the yard, throwing for 300 plus yards a game. Like, if Joe Burrow does not have a great season this year and come back to what he was, there's going to be question marks around Joe Burrow and his contract and all the things that they're paying him. And it'll be a very similar situation, minus the scandals, hopefully, to what Deshaun Watson has gone through in Cleveland. So the Bengals, just because Joe Burrow exists, like, this does not make him or make that team a lock to be fighting for the number one spot in this division. The Ravens too, dude. Like the Ravens, they probably are the best team in that division, but just like we saw in the playoffs, their style of play can unravel really quick if they don't have a lead in the game most of the way through. So I don't know, man. There's a lot of moving parts in this, and I think the AFC North is one of those that I'm going to be watching the futures. I'm going to be watching the playoff implications on the betting lines all year long, and I'm going to ride momentum, and I'm going to dip off. Like, there's going to be a lot of AFC North that will influence the entire playoff picture. And at the end of the day, some of these teams might beat the shit out of each other so much throughout the course of the year that there are not three teams from the AFC North that make it. Because some teams fall off and there's injuries and stuff. So the AFC North, very similarly to the NFC North, will have massive implications for the playoff picture. Like, it's these teams are going to decide a lot in the seeding. So I'm excited to see how it plays out.
I think an interesting note, we talked about it last year with the Bears and how they had the third easiest schedule. The Browns this year have the third hardest schedule. And you talked about how tough this division is. The Steelers, per Warren Sharp, have the hardest schedule. The Browns have the third hardest schedule. The Ravens have the fourth hardest schedule. And The Bengals somehow managed to get the sixth easiest schedule. So that, I mean, I think Bengals that division finessed. Alone, for real. I mean, having
Bengals
having
put money in somebody's pocket.
Having to play in that division alone, I think just naturally makes your schedule so much harder. And like you said, you might only come out and one of these AFC North teams manages to make the playoffs because the rest of the year they're splitting games with each other. And it can be really tough. I do want to ask you, it seems like, as an outsider looking in on the Browns, they're known as one of these cursed, just like loser franchises. We've talked about what like a real loser franchise is. Like, I mean, winless seasons, going through carousels of coaches and quarterbacks. What is it about an organization? Because this is the best example, in my opinion, of you have a coach that Stefanski won coach of the year within the last 3 years. You get a quarterback like Deshaun Watson, who you've been praying for as a franchise. You got rid of Baker Mayfield, who took you to the playoffs for the first time in 20 something years, to get Deshaun Watson. You pay him all this money, and then it seems like you can do all those things correctly, get the quarterback right, get the coach right, get a great defensive coordinator, get all these stud skill position players, and still there's this air of cursedness. There's something that just isn't going right. So what is it about this franchise? Or maybe the question is, what do they need to do to get rid of this stench?
Dude, I'm going to be honest. The first thing that popped into my mind is they have not had consistent quarterback play, and some of these guys have played really good quarterback play in other areas. It's really hard to throw the ball in that stadium, and it's really hard to throw the ball in that weather late in the year, and it's really hard to play football in the AFC North with that style of defense. And you have a team like the Ravens who, for the better half of the last 20 years, Ravens or Steelers, have owned that division, and it's been back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And then you have the Bengals pop up. Like, the Browns have had this unfortunate just mixed bag of dominant ass teams that are going on Super Bowl runs all the time. And they play in a really hard place, dude. Like, I'm thinking about Deshaun Watson. It looked like he had never thrown a football before sometimes last year. And he started picking it up and figuring it out or whatever. But I don't think he's ever consistently played in the cold, ever. He's from Georgia, I believe, or from Florida. He's from one of those South states. He went to Clemson. And then he ended up in Houston in a dome for the first part of his career. And now you're forced to play in the freezing ass cold where the ball is drier. Your hands don't grip it as much. Like, there's little nuances to just having better grip on the ball. Like, I don't know if you ever watched videos of Aaron Rodgers, what he did every time he walked out on the field. He picked up the grass and dirt and rubbed it in his hands. And that's what he did in Lambeau, because the texture from the grass and the residue on it allows your hands to have that little bit of grip that allows you to have that little bit of better ball placement, and that shit matters. And I had an old coach, Greg Knapp, rest in peace, who told me, I don't know if it was Steve Young or it was either Steve Young or Montana, used to have a cup of dirt on the sideline. And after every drive, they would go grab the cup of dirt, like soil, and literally mix it on their hands because the ball is just hard to grip. And I know people talk about big hands and this and that, but like, sometimes it doesn't matter how big your hands are. Like, there's like a threshold that the ball is just going to be slick and it's harder to throw. It's just like in the rain. And you look at them too, they had some nasty, nasty weather games this year in Cleveland. It's just, I don't know, man. That's another team. I look at them like the Bears. Like, if they had a dome, maybe things would be a little bit different, because it doesn't necessarily play to home field advantage when you're consistently having to deal with it. So that's one thing I look at. It's the difference between the dominance of the other two teams, the Ravens and the Steelers, for the last 20 years, even more than that, the rise of the Bengals, and then it's just a hard place to throw the football. So if you're not going to ground and pound consistently, I don't know. I think it's hard to find success and get into a rhythm if your home field is so hard to play at and you don't have the little tips and tricks to make it a real advantage.
Yeah. I think it's interesting too, because it's not even like you have a real home field advantage as it pertains to the rest of your division. I mean, all the teams in the AFC North play outside. We were talking about with the Bears last week, where they build that new stadium downtown. Lambeau will be the only outdoor stadium in the NFC North, which I think comes with a bit of an advantage. I remember Aaron Rodgers talking about it so much that they wanted to play games at Lambeau Field in the playoffs in January because there was an advantage that came with that. But in the AFC North, that's pretty much neutralized because everybody plays outside and everybody's used to it.
Totally. And I think this is also a really funny tidbit. Aaron used to talk about it in Lambeau, that the way the grass is grown and the length of the grass and like the soil underneath, that you need to wear 7 stud cleats when you play on that field. And a lot of guys, and this is talk of the players, talk of the coaches, like, hey, when you go to Lambeau, you need to wear 7 studs or have an extra pair of cleats that are longer or whatever, because you will slip, you will slide. How many times have you seen opposing teams running back slip on a toss sweep in the backfield, like slip when DBs are breaking, whatever? And some guys, like still even as Packers, refused to switch to 7 studs because they felt different. They're a little bit heavier, but Aaron swore by it. And a lot of the linemen swore by it. And like guys that defensive ends swore by it. And that little bit, people as fans don't realize that. Why does a guy look faster one day and one day not? Everything matters. Cleats matter, surface matter, all of it. And maybe some of these guys in Cleveland need to start wearing the 7 stud cleats like you're in Lambeau, because they'll be a little bit faster. They'll be have a little bit more control. Maybe Deshaun Watson needs to have a little bit of something on soil, on in a cup, on the sideline, picking up grass. Like, you need to have something that allows you to like remove that doubt from your mind that, oh, I might run, I might slip here, this ball might slip out of my hand. That stuff is all real. Like, I know we talk about professional athletes, like, he's got big hands, he's an NFL quarterback, the ball's not going to slip, whatever, he's going to be accurate. Like, they're humans, and humans definitely enjoy advantage. They enjoy peace of mind. And when you're competing at the highest level, every little bit matters. And like, those are just some small things that I think really add up.
Yeah. I want to transition us talking about the window that it seems like this Browns team has. So they have Watson locked up on a guaranteed deal through 2027. They have a couple other key players, Denzel Ward, David Njoku, Jerry Jeudy, Za'Darius Smith, even locked up at least through 2025, some of them through 2027. But then you have this crop of older veteran guys, Amari Cooper, who's on the last year of his deal, Nick Chubb, who just went through that gruesome injury. We've talked about running backs a lot and how, especially after an injury like that, we might not see the same Nick Chubb, unfortunately, return to the field this year as we did the first 7 years of his career. So I guess my first question to you is, how do you see this? Is this a transitional year for the Browns? Do they have a next couple of years to really make a run at it? It just seems like they're kind of in this interesting time where if Watson doesn't play well, they might have just missed that window. You know what I mean? With some guys transitioning out.
I think this is the last year of this specific looking window, and whether a new window starts immediately next year or not depends on how much they reload. Guys like Za'Darius Smith are such huge adds to the other side of Myles Garrett. And look, Chubb may never be who he was before, but we'll see, right? But they were showing that Jerome Ford also was able to produce. And let's be honest, there are so many good running backs coming out every year. Like, there are always guys, and there's always receivers. And like, there are some generational guys. Like, Chubb was a generational guy. We don't need a generational running back necessarily to be a Super Bowl team. Like, you need a guy that can fit in the scheme and do this and that. Like, look at the Chiefs. They had Pacheco, and they had McKinnon doing different things, and Clyde Edwards-Helaire doing different things. Like, you don't necessarily need that. It's a nice luxury. Like, Christian McCaffrey is a luxury for sure, but you don't need that necessarily to get the playoffs. You can get them for the right money on the right deal. Like, all that matters. But I'm looking at also Amari Cooper. Like, Amari Cooper would have monster games and be really quiet. And whether it was him, somebody else, whatever, there's just, I think that we think guys are not replaceable because of their names. And I think we kind of fall in love with the idea of, you know, guys like Myles Garrett is a Brown. Like, he's going to be Brown. Like he's that guy. And guys are replaceable, and we see it every single year, and that's just the reality of the NFL. So I think this specific window is coming to a close at the end of this year, this 2025 season, but they still have guys on contract and still have promising guys that a nice reload and maybe an acquisition or two in offseason next year can put them right back into this new period of a window with a new 2 to 3 year time span on all these contracts with that are overlapping. So that's kind of how I see it. I think they're built for success for the long term.
Yeah. How much do you think that hinges on Deshaun Watson playing well? I'm just thinking of the, I'm just thinking like he plays poorly again this year. And that's sort of the third year in a row where he has a disappointing performance. Then what do? You're stuck with his contract.
I think you got to chalk it up. If he plays so bad that he's costing you games, no contract is worth you losing games because of a player playing so bad. I don't care what it is. I don't think that's going to be the case. But again, we might see famous Jameis walking out in December.
That's what I'm saying.
Dun, 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 and like he's just slinging the pill, handing it off 20 times a game, watching his defense like just chop it up and give him the ball back. Like this is a strategic spot for Jameis too. Don't get it twisted. Like he knows that Deshaun's probably going to play well, but if he does not, this is a hell of a place to go as a vet quarterback to go just be a guy that dishes it out, checks it out in the flats, rips the overs like when they're open, like punts on fourth down when you're not trying to force something. Like he can go and Jameis can get it done, man. Jameis went in with the Saints last year and was just slinging it, dude. Like every time he got in, there was fireworks. So there's a contingency plan. I don't think they're going to need it, but he'll be there if he's needed.
So you would call this a make or break year for Deshaun Watson? Like if this does not go well, we might see a new quarterback in a Browns uniform starting next year.
Yeah, if Deshaun Watson can't find it out this year, then I think they need to move on, which would be probably one of the worst financial decisions in the NFL right after or right next to Russell Wilson a couple of years ago. Like, I mean,
yeah,
this shit happens, man. Like this, it happens. And I think the time's ticking, the money's going out and the implications of moving on are less and less each day or each year. So at some point you hope that he pulls it together. And if not, chalk it up.
Yeah. I think that's the Russell Wilson situation is probably analogous to this one where, I mean, I don't know the numbers, but I just assume that, yeah, the moving on from Russ would be way more of a hit or is way more of a hit than what it would be if the Browns moved on from Deshaun Watson next year. And I'm sure there'd be similar amounts of dead cap money that you don't want to take on, but the Broncos did it. And I also, like I come from a point, I never will blame an organization for taking a big swing like that. I mean, say what you want about Russell Wilson or Deshaun Watson. I think in retrospect, the Deshaun Watson move probably looks better. I don't know what your thoughts were of Russ coming out of Seattle and going to Denver, but Deshaun was like hailed as one of the top 10 QB coming out of Houston and he was younger. Yeah. And like,
I would have said top five swing. Even like,
yeah,
like
yeah.
It's a big swing, but he was so young. Like he's still only 29. Like, like Geno Smith just got another contract last year at 30 something. Like, Kirk Cousins is 34 or 35, just got a 4-year deal. Like they got Deshaun Watson pre-inflated market value, in my opinion, paying him for what he has done and what they expected him to do. Just because he didn't live up to the expectation doesn't make it a bad business decision. Mm-hmm. He just hasn't played well. It doesn't mean like no anybody would have done something like that to lock up a quarterback, especially some of these poverty franchises that haven't had a quarterback in God knows how long. Like, you're going to swing for it. If he's available, you're going to go get him. It's just like, it'd be like somebody else getting Justin Herbert. If he decides not to play out, or if he just like when his contract's over with the Chargers, if they can't pull it together, they can't figure it out and become a good team, and he goes somewhere else and then he all of a sudden sucks. Anybody would be happy to pay Justin Herbert to be their quarterback, especially if they don't have a quarterback. So I don't think people can hindsight 2020 that one so much.
Yeah, I agree. And I think at the end of the day, you still have a really good coach, and we can transition to this. You still have a really good coach. A coaching staff, I would say. I mean, Stefanski, I don't know what your thoughts are on him, but I'd actually be curious to hear, where would you rank Stefanski in the four AFC North coaches?
Man, probably at two or one. I mean, I think Harbaugh is won by just common, like his team's always ready and they just find ways to win. I don't think he's the most detailed oriented guy of the bunch. And I don't think like necessarily has it all figured out and there's things they could do better and whatnot, but some way, somehow the Ravens find ways to win in different ways. Sometimes it's through the air, sometimes it's through the ground, sometimes it's through defense, whatever. So I think he's at one, and I'm looking at Stefanski, like his team's always prepared. They always play clean football. They play good defense. They play clean offense. Like, the problems they had fell into Deshaun Watson. There's no way. Like, they had another quarterback come in and who was able to just seamlessly keep them going, where Joe Flacco has looked awful everywhere he's been after his stint with the Ravens. Like, he has not looked good. So for him to be able to plug and play means all the pieces were there. All of the communication was there. The receivers were running the right routes, the right timing. Like, they were very sharp relative. So I think that's the take of like a really good coach. I think he could go somewhere else and make a bad team better. So I would put him at number two. I think Tomlin, I would put Tomlin probably at four right now, just because I don't love mediocrity. And I think that they've been just above mediocre for a long time, and they've had their good stints, but they also had some dog ass players. And now that they don't necessarily, I mean, they've found ways to win too, and they're leaning on their defense. So I can't even fully go in on them like that. But I think that I think that Tomlin is like, he's kind of like who Ron Rivera wants to be. You know what I mean? Like, I'll get you to the playoffs. After that, man, it's just on you. Like, maybe our quarterback plays amazing. Maybe our, you know, defense has some crazy plays and they get us a little bit further. But like, I'll get you to the playoffs. And yeah. I think that's kind of what Tomlin's been like in the last, I don't know, 5-10 years.
Yeah, it's tough. And you obviously have Zach Taylor slotted in there at three. And maybe the better question is, like, I think current ranking is difficult. Maybe the better question would be, who would you rather have coach your team starting from a blank slate going forward?
Ooh, yeah. Can't argue against Stefanski, dude. Like, talking about a blank slate of who the Browns were, Stefanski or Harbaugh, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, probably Stefanski.
Wow. It is tough, but I think he has proven, like, the Ravens have been good for a long time. Stefanski came into one of the worst franchises of all time.
Yeah, like could Harbaugh have gone? Could any of those other coaches have gone to the Browns and done what Stefanski has done? That's the real question.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't think so. Maybe not. Probably not. Like, that was a tough-ass situation to come and dig out of. And now they're fighting with no – they had no quarterback last year, and they were fighting through. Like, like, Joe Flacco was cast to the wolves after his other stints. Like, yeah, I mean, that's really impressive.
If you want to compare him and Harbaugh, like, he got run out of town in Baltimore, where Harbaugh coaches, and went to the Browns.
Where if the Ravens didn't have Lamar, like, Harbaugh's last five years or whatever would not be what they are.
We're talking ourselves into Kevin Stefanski, best coach in the AFC North. But I don't think it's a hot take.
Really a hot take, and I think he's going to be a fan of the pod now.
I think so. Steelers fans might not be a fan of the podcast, but that's
Steelers fans have not a lot to be excited about. I'll tell you that right now. Steelers fans, Vikings fans, I'm sorry. You might not want to listen because I don't have many nice things to say.
Let's look over to the defense.
Play hard.
Yeah. In tough divisions. I mean, divisions with good quarterbacks.
Somebody's got to come in last, baby. if you took them out of the divisions and sent them to this is a really good question. If you took the Steelers and the Vikings out of their NFC divisions and put them into their AFC counterpart divisions, would they win that division? Or where would they end up?
Oh my God. No shot. I think the Vikings would be a clear last place team in the AFC North.
In the NFC South. No. In the NFC South, I'm saying.
Oh, in the NFC South.
If you took the Vikings and sent them to the NFC South, would the Vikings be able to like cause a little trouble? I think they come in like second in the division, maybe third.
Yeah, that's a really bad division. I think.
And then the Steelers, if you took the Steelers out of the AFC North and sent them to the AFC South,
I think they would be battling for last place.
You think they'd be battling for last place?
I think they would. Yeah. I mean, if you look at quarterbacks alone, I would say they have.
I don't know if the Titans would score a point on the Steelers.
That's true. The Titans. I did forget about the Titans.
I don't know if the Colts, I mean, the Colts, might, who knows? The one team that I have no clue what they're going to do this year is the Colts. I mean, who knows? I'm going to bet against them early.
Yeah, that's so Anthony Richardson dependent. He looked really good last year, but that's also, I think, a factor of new quarterback. You don't have a lot of tape on him. He can also run. And so he can, like, the same thing we talked about Jane Daniels, like his floor was just a bit higher than a lot of guys because he could make things happen. But then we saw when he did do that, you're at risk of getting injured, which happened multiple times last year. Yeah. That's an interesting thought experiment. I think that to answer your question, I think the Vikings are probably better off, but that's purely because the NFC South is just a bad division.
Yeah, I think so. NFC South is tough. I mean, you got the Falcons plus 105 to win it, and then you have the Bucks plus 300. I mean, you could put like $100 on the Falcons and like $50 on the Bucks, and if either of the two of them win the division, you come out positive.
I think about teams.
That's the way I think about it.
Teams that we might not get to this summer due to do case studies, and a lot of teams in the AFC South fall into that category, which is just like they're around and hanging out, and they're not interesting to talk about at all, and they'll probably be in the playoffs at the end of the year, but you won't be excited about them at all.
Yeah, like if we did a Jaguars case study, we might have like 2,000 views after a month. There's only 2,000 Jaguars fans out there.
They're getting a new stadium.
And some of them will. Some of them will have watched it multiple times.
Yeah. Let's flip over. Let's get back to the Browns. Let's flip over to the defensive side of the ball. Jim Schwartz. He obviously didn't have a ton of success as the head coach of the Lions, but has found a lot of success as the DC in Cleveland. I just want to get your take, and this is coming from the perspective of a quarterback. But what makes his defense so tough to play against? Because every year you hear about how good that defense is, and of course they have really good playmakers. I mean, like when you have an edge guy like Myles Garrett, it's going to make your job as a DC a lot easier. But what does he do from a scheme perspective that makes them have one of the top defenses year in and year out?
Dude, they're just sound. Like, they're sound. They play good man coverage. They get home with four. They also dial up blitzes. Like, they are one of those defenses that, like, are not going to beat themselves. And I think a lot of times when you look at when you look at the Packers, right, last year with Joe Barry, they would line up on 3rd and 3 with 6 yards of separation on the slot receiver. Like, they just gave up. The Packers, they just gave up easy first downs. Jim Schwartz and his defense, they play sound. They make you earn every inch, every drive for the most part, and they rarely have MAs, missed assignments. When you have that style of defense matched with a four down front that can create pressure very similarly to the 49ers without having to bring 5 or 6 guys blitzing every time, it allows you to play better defense in the secondary. You're able to be more reactive with your eyes and zones. And I don't know, man, the formula that the 49ers have on defense, like if I'm a GM, I am doing my damnedest to replicate that style of play in whatever way that I can. And some of these other teams, like you look at like Zimmer and stuff, like Zimmer went to Dallas. Like they have all these exotic packages and all these random things. And like, yeah, they create turnovers and they like cause havoc, but they also get gashed. Like it's all in or all out with them. And that's not how the Browns play defense. So, you know, if you score a touchdown one drive, like it's going to be hard to score a touchdown the next drive. Like you have to earn it every single time. Whereas some of these defenses, dude, they're just like, F it, zero blitz, like zero blitz. And it creates an opportunity for the offense to have a home run. And I think that is style, like matched with their style of offensive play where they run the shit out of the ball. Like they control the clock. They get people off the field. They make you earn it all the way down the field. And they play like sticky coverage. So it's this recipe for what you want your perfect defense to look like. They're opportunistic. They're in good like alignment. They're always in the right place. And that's the recipe. It's hard to do though, because you can't just go grab a Myles Garrett anywhere. Like you can't go get these DBs that can create interceptions and turnovers and like be reactive to the ball. Not every DB is like that. They got a good formula, dude. So hopefully they can keep it together, because it is like, I don't like watching defense. Like it's not, I like watching offenses, obviously. Their defense is fun to watch because you see how they work in tandem and you're like, damn, dude, like it's just hard to score points. And then you add in the weather factor. It's already hard to throw the ball there in late in the year. It's like, you got to be damn near perfect to move the ball versus them.
But then you go back to the offensive side of the ball and you think, what's the one thing that can neutralize a defense like that? And it's the way that Deshaun Watson has been playing a lot early in his time with the Browns, which is just giving the ball right back.
The fact that their defense played so well with how bad Deshaun Watson played was like double impressive, because typically when you have a quarterback that's a bunch of three and outs, a bunch of turnovers, this and that, the defense is more gassed. They're more tired. Like they're on the field more. It's just like, it's hard to keep that brick wall up. And you saw that late in the year too, especially in that Texans game. Dude, they got gassed. They had some big plays they let up. Like it just kind of all fell apart. But I think a hard reset in the offseason, getting back to their stuff. Like, I don't know, man. This Browns team is one of those that I'm like, I would not count them out. I would not look at them as a plus 500 team to win the division. Like, I think the Browns should be more favored than the Bengals to win the division just on the fact that Joe Burrow has to play against that Browns defense. Like, we'll see. And I'm a big Joe Burrow fan. Like, I like how he plays the game, but he's not a superhero. And he has flaws and he makes mistakes and he doesn't have this and that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's a good player, but Joe Burrow is not Patrick Mahomes, in my opinion. Joe Burrow is not Justin Herbert physically, Josh Allen physically. Like, he's got his physical limitations. And you've got to be damn near perfect when you're playing against this Browns defense. And I don't know. I'm excited to see it. If you can match this Browns defense with any bit of offensive production this year that's consistent, holy shit, this team could be scary.
Let's get your predictions for the AFC North this year. We've talked about how we like the coaches, how we like the quarterbacks. How do you see the AFC North shaking out at the end of this year?
Okay. I'm going to go schedule by schedule.
Okay.
So the Browns schedule, you got the Cowboys at home. I think they'll win. I think the Browns will win. You have the Jaguars away. I think they'll start 2-0. The Giants 3-0. Raiders maybe go 4-0. Commanders probably 5-0. Eagles in Philly probably lose that. 5-1. Then you have the Bengals at home. Probably win that. They have the Ravens at home. Tough game. 50-50. Like, maybe you're like 7-2 at that point. Chargers, you'll probably win that. 8-2. Like, then they have the Saints, should be a win. Steelers should be a win. Broncos should be a win. Like, this Browns team, dude, this is what I'm saying, though. Like, the beginning part of their schedule is pretty smooth. Like, the Cowboys are not, like, some juggernaut team. Like, I don't believe that at all. They start the year with the Cowboys at home, which they should win that game. Then they have the Jags, the Giants, the Raiders, the Commanders. Then you go to Philly in October. Like, they could damn near start this season 5-0. Then you have the Bengals at home. You have the Ravens at home. Chargers, like we just talked about. Like, this schedule is tough. You do have tough teams, but you're a fucking good team. Like, the Browns are a good team. And they get these home games early. That's kind of nice. Where late in the year, dude, they're a little gauntlet. The last four games of the season are the Chiefs. Then they play the Bengals away. Then they play the Dolphins. Then they play the Ravens away. Like, I don't know, man. I'm looking at this schedule and I'm like, I understand that it's one of the hardest in the NFL apparently, but shit, dude, it's only hard because your division's hard. You play those six games and those are six hard games, and you have a few sprinkled in here and there that are hard out of division, but they're non-divisional games. Like, they're very winnable, very much like could dominate them. And I don't know, man. I just, with this defense, anything is possible. This defense makes it really hard for a guy like Joe Burrow to go off. It makes it really hard for a guy like Pat Mahomes to go off. It makes it really hard for Tua. Like, we know what happens when he gets uncomfortable. Like, I don't know, man. I think with his defense, anything's possible. And I'm probably going to put some money down on the Browns to at least make the playoffs. And then we need to see what their win total prediction is. But they should make the playoffs, in my opinion, which is counterintuitive to what Vegas says. And then they very well could win their damn division. Like, I don't know. I think that people have written off the Browns for whatever reason, but Deshaun Watson might write back this year.
Their implied win total is 8.7 per Warren Sharp. So I assume that most Vegas lines would have them at 8.5 wins.
So do we think they're going to get 9? Let's see. I think they beat the Cowboys week 1 at home. I think they beat the Jaguars. That's 2. I think they beat the Giants. That's 3. I think they beat the Raiders. That's 4. I think they beat the Commanders. That's 5. I think they lose the Eagles. I think they beat the Bengals when they play at their own home. That's 6. The Ravens game, 50-50. They play the Chargers, that should be 7. They play the Saints, that should be 8. Then they play the Steelers at home, that should be 9. Then they play the Broncos, and then they play the Steelers again. And then they have Chiefs, Bengals, Dolphins, Ravens. Like, probably get one more. They could be a 11-plus win team. Like, very understandably. So if Vegas is saying they need 9, I'm going to say you give yourself 2 to 3 games of a buffer if they just blunder some games. And then if they win some of these really tough games, then there's no way they don't win double-digit games this year.
Okay. Give me your final rankings. We don't have to go through the schedule of every team, but if we assume the Browns are going to win somewhere between 9 and 11 games, how do you see the rest of this division shaking out?
I see the Ravens winning most of the games. I think the Ravens will repeat very similar to what they did last year. I think the Browns and the Bengals will both be 9 to 11 win teams and make the playoffs via wild card. I think the Steelers will probably be one of the worst teams in the NFL this year. And I don't think they're going to be like Panthers ugly product. I just think they got a lot of tough ass games. Like, I don't think the Steelers are going to put a terrible product on the field. I just think they got the tallest task of anybody right now. And they might beat some of these other teams so that are like run of the mill, but Steelers will be battle tested, but I think they'll fall fourth in the AFC North.
We're going to end it here like we ended our last few case studies. I want you to look at the camera and sell these Cleveland Browns fans a bit of hope. They've had it harder than maybe any fan base of any sport in America. I need you to give them hope for 2024.
Browns fans, listen up. You've had it rough for the last century of your life. You're probably not 100 years old, but it's been a rough life as a Browns fan. It ends this year. You're going to have hope. You're going to have exciting quarterback play. I know you thought you were getting it last year, but you had to pause a little bit and really go through it one more time, and now Deshaun Watson's going to show up for you. Your defense is going to be stellar, just like it was last year. And I know Vegas has you at 8.5 wins this year. That's bullshit. You're going to get 9+ easy. I'm looking at 10, 11. Shit, maybe you squeak out 12. I could see you coming at the top of your division. I'm not going to go all the way and say it's going to happen, but you're at least going to be a wild card team, and you're going to be fighting for something late in January. It may all come crumbling down when you go back to M&T Bank Stadium, but we're not going to get there right now. I have hope for you. You should have hope for yourselves. Not a lot of people are talking about you, but I don't think the Deshaun Watson contract was such a problem, because I think he's going to show up this year. You're going to see who you saw in that fourth quarter of the Ravens game when he brought you back down 2 scores to win the game, and you're going to see that more often this year than you did last year by a landslide. It's your year, Browns fans, to make the playoffs and not have to sweat it out with Joe Flacco. I'm out.
I'm not going to assume I know what it's like to be a Browns fan, but it does seem like these last couple of years are probably even harder than the years where you go 0-16, 2-14, because those years you chalk it up pretty quickly. This is going to suck. We're just going to embrace this. Yeah. But these last couple of years, you come in with expectations. Having the expectations is the worst part. And then being let down on those expectations is really what kills you. It's not knowing you're going to be bad and then being bad. It's hoping that, they have Super Bowl aspirations. I think a lot of Browns fans would say they think this team is of the caliber to win a Super Bowl. And then when you get bounced in the first round and your quarterback that you're paying all that money to plays horribly, that's the worst part, in my opinion.
I agree, dude. It's just the psychology around being a Browns fan and also having to see teams like the Ravens and the Steelers and now the Bengals year in and year out have true Super Bowl hopes, when you're just like, man, can we get something we can hang our hat on? Like, I hope for Browns fans that they can hang their hat on Deshaun Watson. That would be it. And if they can't, I hope they get somebody as soon as possible they can hang their hat on, because they have everything they need to be successful this year, like really successful and make a deep run. They have a crazy-ass crowd that goes nuts when they get home field advantage. They have a nasty defense. They have a great run game. They got a good tight end who can play both in the run game and the pass game. They got good receivers. They need one thing. They need their money man to show up this year. And I think he does. I think he does. But what a way to go out with this episode. I think Browns fans, we all know what the big question mark is. And I think it's going to be answered this year. I truly do. And if it's not, then we all know what the answer is not. And he should be swiftly and promptly forced to leave. The end.